I think I'm more I'm looking forward to sharing this conversation because it's important to me. But it's probably something I've dreaded more than anything.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're in LifeWord Studios broadcasting in 127 countries in over 175 languages to a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today, we have with us a BMA of Arkansas church planner, Jake McCandless. Jake, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, absolutely. I appreciate I'm glad we're going to have this conversation, but I will say out of all the things I've done, this is something I think I'm more anxious. I'm looking forward to sharing this conversation because it's important to me, but it's probably something I've dreaded more than anything. It's something I knew in my life I'm going to have this conversation. I mean, over the last few months, I'm like, I know this conversation's coming, but now having to have it, I'm like, So I'm glad to have this conversation and not glad to have this conversation.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell people all the time, and this isn't a therapy session by any means, but therapy in and of itself is traumatic that we go through, we relive things. So I can understand how you'd be a little anxious this morning just to tell the story. But
it's not so much the story. I think it's more of just I've not owned that my journey. And in the ministry space, I've not owned my journey so much. And I think that's combining those two is I think kind of what's happening today. So that's a step for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how all of this just began, where you came to the conclusion of, hey, something's going on here that is out of my control.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, this conversation was like, I've been pastoring for, I've been in ministry, surrendered to preach when I was 16, started on staff when I was 19. I'm 44 now. So whatever that math is, been in ministry. And I'm not sure how I ever thought mental, emotional health fit in there, to be honest. And really, you know, I was trained in biblical counseling, you know, in my pastoral studies there in college at Central Baptist College, and then at Southwestern and at seminary, and focused on marriage and family. Then got in the pastor and did my first marriage counseling. I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this. It's always partnered with kind of outside counselors I found to be stronger. I did do the premarital counseling, enjoyed doing that. And, but still when it came down like to mental health, emotional health, I didn't really know where that fit. And honestly, that was something I probably felt like I couldn't talk about. I was kind of like, that's kind of, to borrow from like Duck Dynasty stuff, that was kind of yuppie type conversation. 2021, me and my wife were doing this. We lost a lot of weight doing this health program. And so we kind of began coaching others in it. And so we won a trip to Florida, which involved going to this conference. And so we went for the beach, you know, went to Florida, a date weekend. The conference turned out to be an emotional intelligence conference. And, you know, as a pastor, I've been to pastoral conferences, you know, church growth, all that good stuff. To walk into emotional intelligence conference, it was the most grueling thing I've ever sat through. I had never, it sounds so ridiculous, but I was challenging simple things. My big takeaway was one of the, just as simple as, hey, when you feel anger, you don't have to act out. And I mean, like simple things like that. And I can't tell you just how like my mind, and it was ridiculous. I mean, I've been pastoring for several years at that point, you know, college, seminary, all of these things. And that conference just kind of wrecked me in a lot of ways. And it was really there, a seed was actually, it was a moment in the session. And so, I mean, me and my wife, we had this, I mean, I think in many ways, this magical connection, great chemistry, great partner in ministry, but we have just throughout our marriage has struggled in a cycle of, and I can't even put into words of just something from me just created this cycle of, you know, I don't even put it in words. It just, you know, we've been married for 23 years. It just created, you know, broke the peace, you know, every few weeks or whatever it is. And she turns to me in this session. And I guess the guy was talking about something in your life causes, you know, stuff to happen. I don't even know what he said. And she turns to me, and it wasn't a bad moment, but she turns to me and says, "That's you." And it was almost like a Holy Spirit moment. And as soon as she said that, this memory came to me. And the memory it came to me was actually what I know now, like a placeholder memory. And I knew she was right. And but I didn't do anything about it. So 3 years later, but what's crazy is, and what point I want to make, I guess, is so for 20 plus years of marriage, had this struggle that didn't match up to my values, didn't match up to who I wanted to be, that I was continually praying about. I mean, you take my prayer journals and look at, continually white knuckling, continuing, you know, doing things and nothing changed. If you find yourself in that situation like that, there's probably something under the surface that's not addressed. I didn't know that was an option. The only option I knew that was sin. You know, I was continuing to sin and I just couldn't beat myself into submission. And so it's just a continued cycle of frustration. And so we had that moment, and fast forward 2 or 3 years. And I, after the attacks in 10/7 with Israel, ministry I involved in, I got the chance to go with the press to Israel and tour the attack sites. And so I went through, you know, really didn't bother me at the time. Didn't think much about it. I mean, it was tough, you know, walking through where these attacks had happened, come back home, and we just never got our footing. It was just this, it was strange, and still can't even put my finger on what it was. And so just in the process of searching, man, how do we get this fixed? I actually reached out to a counselor, and like, I mean, I just talked to somebody. And in the process of working through what am I going to say to the counselor, out of nowhere, I had this memory, this flash of a memory of a traumatic event from childhood, unrelated to family, from a stranger, that I had no clue about. 35 years, subconscious, floored me. And fortunately, I already had a plan in place to meet with a counselor, and so began that process. And so that's how I got there. And man, but you talk about completely changing how you see your life, you know. And so begin to walk through that, and it was with a Christian counselor. You know, that did the EMDR, which was a big game changer, and began to walk through that process there. So that was the process of getting there. So that was July 2024. And so I'm a couple years into that journey.
Yeah. So I'm just going to back up here for a minute to explain some things for our listeners. So when we talk about emotional intelligence, what the layman's explanation is that it is your ability to control your emotions, and your emotions are your own emotions. Nobody causes you to be angry. You decide to be angry. You know, and I find it interesting that the only control that Jesus ever told us to have is self-control, and that we guard our hearts, and that we do the things that we know to be right. It's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to sin in that anger. You know, one of the most quoted things that I have said that, and I said it one day, and all of a sudden it was in a newspaper article that I said this, and that's a scary thing to think of because I say a lot of things, but it was this: however you feel, it's okay to feel that way. Just don't unpack and live there. So when we have this emotion, emotional intelligence is basically the ability to control our emotions, and your emotions are your own. So we go to these, you know, conferences, these things, and they kind of open up our mind to think, well, hey, you know, maybe I do have an anger issue, or maybe I have an issue of getting my feelings hurt a lot. That, you know, sometimes we look through that lens of trauma and how we were raised. You know, there are so many different things that parents have said and done that have caused this little mark. And as you said, moving forward, that one day you just was brought to your mind, you had an epiphany, if you will, of a past trauma. Our brain does a very, very good job of masking and hiding certain traumas, especially in childhood and adolescence, that these things are just covered up. I had a client here about 2 years ago that in therapy, he had this inclination, is what he said, that his father had molested him when he was 5, 6, 7 years old. And he said, I know that my dad didn't do that, but now all of a sudden I have this memory, like this very vivid picture of what was happening. And so he asked his brother about it. And sure enough, it did happen, and it happened to his brother in the same manner. Now this guy's, you know, 29, near 30 years old, and this memory is just now uncovered. So when we go through these processes of self-realization, of acknowledging mental health, of being able to get healthy mentally, our brain does then unpack these memories or these placeholders that have just been there long enough to mask the trauma that then becomes an issue as an adult, especially when we get into certain traumatic events, as you said, your trip, that kind of opened up with this conference, this trip, that things kind of really opened up for you. Now, I want to ask you this question, and this is probably the question you didn't want to have, okay? So, okay. But we're here.
Okay.
As pastors, there is sometimes this view of mental health in the church that is not reflected to be true when it comes to mental health. And that is that all mental health issues that are not physiological issues is based in guilt, shame, and sin. Now, as someone who is a pastor, someone who was trained in biblical counseling, when you came to the realization that, hey, this is, I need to talk to somebody about this.
Yeah.
Where was your heart in that moment, reflective on everything that you had been taught?
I'm so glad you asked this question, because I actually probably didn't wrestle with this until afterwards. And I actually was just wrestling with this last night on my drive back. I was in your chair last night recording for the podcast for LifeWord. And I was driving back and was wrestling with this. And I think this is huge. And I'm always one, you know, you got to be careful that your life experience, you know, wrestling with life experience and theology. But there comes a point where you have to say, wait a minute, my life experience is completely different than maybe what I thought my theology or whatever it was. And so to start with, I think we have completely flattened the gospel in terms of when we talk about sin. And to kind of unpack what I mean is, I was just wanting help. I wanted to be the man I needed to be for my family. I honestly went to So the crack that I had before I went to therapy was very minute, and I had no idea what I was getting into. And so when I began to walk through EMDR and that stuff, I had no idea where it was going to go. And it's just continued going. And I want to say, and I'd made this point, it wasn't family related. It was related to a stranger, basically. So it was kind of a unique, not unique, but it was how that situation was. And so went through that, October, November of 2025, you know, basically a little over a year in, I reached a healing point, and it was beautiful. For the first time really since age 7 or 8 when that happened, I was regulated probably for the first time nervous system wise. I have since been diagnosed clinically with PTSD. That was probably at a, you know, whatever stable point, whatever that is, it gets to. And it was beautiful, you know, healing becoming into my family and all that stuff. And then another layer breaks with that. But at that healing point, I remember leaving my last therapy session. I graduated. We kind of made a big deal about it. And I got in the car, and I was going to try to find a song to listen to on the drive home. And what I realized, I didn't have a single song in my library, in my playlist, that was related to where I was at. And because I'd never been in that spot before, I had never been like healed. And I got home, and later that evening I was going through my like a prayer time and reflecting on some things. And I was reminded of a song in youth group that impacted me at 14, 15, whatever it was. And it was the chorus, holiness, holiness is what I long for. Holiness is what I need. But we would re-sing it. Brokenness is what I long for. Brokenness is what I need. Here I am at 14, grew up in church, man, was the good kid, devoted to Christ early. You know, if you looked at my rap sheet, you know, it was some cuss words and sneaking some Cinemax through the lines at night. That was my rap sheet, you know. But I would sing that brokenness song and just cry my guts out at youth group. And that was, and I was in that moment, I'm just thinking, what was, like, I understood this brokenness for sin, but in reality, that was not the case of my story. But I spent from, you know, that early age till really that point at 42, you know, just living this life of just destroyed inwardly of, and basically, I struggled with what would be like, I think you would say, self-eradication. Like, I gravitated to the, you know, the parts of the following Christ of, like, you know, being a sacrifice, basically removing yourself, which would come out of shame and come out of stuff like that. Because the only aspect of the gospel I understood was, you're a sinner, you're broken, you're dead, you're nothing, and you need to be saved, Christ. But that's not the full story of the gospel. We're in a broken world, and I would dare to say that most all of us have been impacted more through sin around us that has shaped us and impacted us. And that was my story. Someone else's sin upon me had wrecked me and broke me far more than the sin. That doesn't mean I'm not guilty for sin. That doesn't mean I don't need a personal savior. But I wish there had been a lane that somehow had paved a way for me to understand that path, if that makes sense. And so last night, so I had just, I had this new layer of basically another episode break in December, and I just started EMDR for that Wednesday. And so I was great. This great move when I started to the studio yesterday. By the time I'm heading home, it's getting pretty negative. And I was trying to find some music coming back, and I was going through all the songs I could find, and I couldn't find a single Christian song that actually spoke like that. And I was Ben Fuller, new artist I was listening to. He had some songs about being a black sheep and all those things. But it still focused on, again, like it would maybe suggest someone being hurt, but then went straight into heavy on the personal sin. And I may have got off from your original question, but I think something as pastors that we miss is pretty much anybody, even in deep personal sin, they got there because of brokenness that was cast upon them and where they were at. And I know for me, like there wasn't a lane, and the only lane that was put before me was, you know, was guilt and shame. Again, there was personal sin. There was need for a personal savior, but there wasn't a lane for that. And so that's really opened my eyes to a verse that has spoke to me is the bruised reed passage, the suffering servant passage that where Jesus came not to, I'm going to butcher it here, but I butchered the question there, but that's been an eye opening for me and realizing that I think we really flattened the gospel. And I was listening to secular music on the way back and finding secular music does a better job finding people in the mess of the world and showing like really meeting them where they're at than a lot of even Christian music does.
Yeah. You know, you and I are about the same age. And so you probably remember, you know, when we would have Red Ribbon Week, which was, you know, the drug awareness week, one of the main mottos of that was that marijuana was the gateway drug.
Yeah.
I believe now as an adult that that's not a true statement. I believe that trauma is the gateway drug. We begin to look for something to fill that void. Yes. And here's where the rub comes, is that we are taught to believe as Christians that Jesus, and Jesus is the answer. Okay, I'm not 100%. Refuting that. He is the answer. But Jesus also gives us resources, scripture, brotherhood, counseling, therapy, medication, to fill in the gaps. Now, could we say that Jesus has the ability to heal mental health issues? Absolutely. He can do whatever he wants to do because he's a sovereign God.
Yeah.
But we also know that we deal with trials and tribulations on this earth that help us to become greater witnesses for those who are suffering with the same issues. And so while we do know that Jesus is sufficient in all things, and the gospel is sufficient in all things, we also realize that in Scripture, it is believed that if your child was born blind, or if your child was born deaf, or whatever the case may be, if you had leprosy, that that was because of some type of generational sin. And if we can believe that about Scripture, then why can we not believe that there was a sin that was imputed against us that caused or was the root of this mental health condition? So yeah. I submit that to you. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes. I absolutely. I think so. I think I threw out this question recently to one of our small groups is the idea of that basically no sin comes out of a vacuum. No one's sinful life comes out of a vacuum with that. And I saw a quote the other day, and it was meant in like to be against clinic. I know your heart. We're not against. I'm not against any like a type of biblical counseling. Yeah. I was trained in that, and those type things. But at the same time, what I have learned over the last couple of years is the need of what I would say clinical informed or trauma informed type counseling, because if I had stayed in just the loop I was, I would have never got healing, and my marriage never would have got healing. My family would never got healing, and it would have continued in my family. Because I sat in this, so I went through EMDR, and I don't know if that's something you've talked about in a show that type of treatment. And I had a treatment with that Wednesday. And so it's dealing with this new layer of trauma that surfaced. And we basically just dealt with what's been stored in my body for 35 years. And I walk out of there just like in awe, because it just seems like such a crazy thing. And I mean, I literally at one point basically ended up almost in the floor from the couch of just, I mean, it was just like, if somebody hasn't seen it or been through it, it sounds like the craziest thing in the world. But the next morning in that moment, I'm sitting in there, and you could kind of go through these phases of it. And my therapist asked, you know, what are you feeling now? And I told her, and I said, I feel the absence of shame. And so I'd already gone through this one season of EMDR, and the heart of all that was to rewrite the story that that trauma had imprinted into me, or I had written to that. And it was cool to have this moment of, hey, that was successful. Mm-hmm. We rewrote that. And, you know, that was something that, you know, if I had not come across somebody to do that, that wouldn't have happened. And, but yeah, I think the aspect of understanding, hey, it's more like you said, yeah, it can come from other places. It can come from, and we're just in a fallen world. And the Hebraic, I think one of the things that I've had to go back to, the Hebraic view of the fall was that we're just cast out of Eden in a fallen world. And you really don't have the view that we really harp on come along to later in Christianity. And if you just kind of look it through the lens of, hey, we're just out of Eden, we're just in this fallen world, that makes it. And but another defense I saw come out in view of kind of against clinical trauma-informed counseling was, if it's a heart problem, then it needs a heart solution. But I think one of the things that we miss is God never meant the heart to be a vague thing.
Yeah.
The Hebrew word for heart is the bowels, and the bowels is, I think, really getting into the nervous system, and it's not a vague thing. And it's speaking to something very specific. And that's when, you know, and I know that some of the, you know, what I've experienced, and what I just experienced Wednesday was actually dealing with what had been stored up in that nervous system that hadn't been dealt with in decades.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, you know, when we look at the heart, the seat of the emotion, as being the bowel, did you know, this is, I guess, a weird psychology fact for the day, is that 98% of your serotonin, which is, I call the happy juice of the brain, 98% of it is not only made, but is stored in your gut. And so when we look at the seat of the emotion and what makes us happy, it is in our gut. So you mentioned two things real quick, that two clinical terms that I want to just define real quick for our listeners. EMDR, it's eye movement desensitization realization process. So when you sleep at night, you hopefully get into a REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep, and that's your deepest sleep. And what happens during your REM sleep is that your eyes literally do move back and forth. If you've ever watched somebody who was asleep, which I know is kind of cringy, but if you've ever watched maybe your kid or your baby sleep, you'll notice at some point in time, the inside, you'll see that their eyes are moving. And what is, in the simplest terms, what is happening is that from that day, your brain is scanning all the data that has happened during that day and is packaging it into short-term or long-term memory. And so you have this process going on. So what happens with trauma is that you have this big package and your brain doesn't know where to put it. So it's always in the forefront. And so what EMDR is helps you to break down that package into smaller packets so that you can process through it, so then it can be packaged away wherever it needs to go. And a lot of times that is bring it back into our short-term memory to be able to process that and enough to get it in our long-term memory so that we're able to be able to process that. A lot of people say you get over it or you get through it, and that's not necessarily the case. You just process it. And then you use the term PTSD, which we've talked about here on the show before, post-traumatic stress disorder. There is a new diagnosis of PTSD, which is CPTSD, which is complex PTSD. And what that is that the traumatic experience was not just one experience, but something that happened over many years. And so one of the best treatments that I have seen for PTSD is EMDR, and it is widely accepted within the military and paramilitary organizations. I'm glad that you're using that. Now, I want to say this, backing up just a little bit. I believe that there is a place, there is a use that is helpful for not only empathetic counseling, but for biblical counseling, for Christian counseling. All of that is good. There is nothing wrong with any of that. But let me give you this example. If you were to wake up tomorrow and you had a big lump on the side of your neck, you're probably not going to go to your pastor. You're probably not going to go to your deacons or your best friend. You're probably going to go to your family physician. And when your family physician looks at that lump and does whatever, if they don't know or they don't feel like they could be productive, they're going to send you to a specialist. I think it's very, very important for those people who are practicing in noethetic counseling, biblical counseling, or Christian counseling, that they realize that there are things that are outside of their ability to treat. And that's where the issue comes, is if we believe, and again, the Bible is sufficient for all things. Christ is sufficient for all things. But there are other resources that are effective that treat maybe better or quicker that can be used. And I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we say, well, Scripture is sufficient for all things. I recently told someone who's a noethetic counselor, we were talking, and I said, look, I have ADHD, and I have to take Adderall twice a day, or there is just no way that I would get anything done. And this person looked at me and said, you don't need Adderall. You don't have ADHD. You have a self-control and discipline issue. And I'm going, excuse me? Because we can see ADHD in the brain through functional MRI. We can see how that process works of how the neurons don't connect. And so if we are going to be that, for lack of a better word, if we're going to be that dogmatic about what this counseling is and how it is sufficient, we are giving a false projection of what things are. And if we're not careful, what happens is we reinitiate or substantiate the guilt and shame that is brought into it. So kind of wrapping this up, and this was a very brief run-through of this, but wrapping this up, what would you say with your experience of where someone may be sitting today and they're saying, you know, I know that God is sufficient in all things, God can heal me, but it's just not getting better. What do we do?
Before I answer that, I do want to, one thing I've learned in the process, though, I spent my life over spiritualizing things, hiding behind spiritual comments. And so that's another danger I would warn. So that the question, make sure I got it right, is somebody who's not getting over things, what would I recommend? I would recommend anybody, just period, you need to work on your emotional. I guess I use emotional health more than mental health, but mental emotional health, it's just something we neglect, period. It's going to make your, man, it's going to make you a better husband. It's going to make you a better father. It's going to make you a better person, better pastor. It's going to make you just better. So as we're planning church here, our focus has been, we're meeting mostly homes and stuff, but the main focus is just getting in people's lives better. And what I have been able to find getting that close to people more than I ever have in ministry is there is a wall in discipleship and Christian growth that gets to the emotional, mental layer. And I think what happens in church a lot of times is people get to this baggage layer, which can be trauma, maybe to the level I was at, or maybe it's a, you know, just a parental wound, or something like that. And it's a fork in the road. Are they going to deal with it or not? And typically there's no avenue to deal with it. So they're either they're going to just put the mask on and trudge on and stay at the level they're at, or they're going to jump ship. And that's when they're going to exit out of church. And so I think on the pastoral end, I think that's where we see a lot of exits. And my reports have been, well, we've not grown a lot, but we've got all of our leaders in counseling but I've seen deeper transformation because we've got to that fork in the road and we've created avenues to face that baggage. So I think I would just say, period, everybody, if I heal, I'm still going to keep this in my life because it's just needs to, it's like I need to go to the gym. I need to eat right. I need to work on this as well. But just like you said, it's finding a specialist, finding the right specialist, because it is, you're letting someone in your head. I mean, it is a extremely serious thing, but at the same time, you need to let, move forward in this, but it is a huge block. I mean, it is huge, but it unlocks so much. It has been transferred. It's hard. I mean, it's been a hard road, and I've still got a hard road ahead. I'm towards the end of it, but it's worth every step of it. I encourage somebody to take the step, even if you don't even know, it's worth just to sit down, to start that conversation. And it's not that hard at all. It just starts with a conversation.
Yeah. And maybe because I'm in the field that I'm in, I believe that it's okay for anybody to just sit down with a therapist and talk, whether you think you've got anything going on or not. I mean, you change your oil every however many thousand miles. It's good to have some preventative maintenance from time to time.
It's paying for a friend. My therapist calls it wise counsel, and I've loved that term. I mean, because it's helped me. Now, granted, it took me a long time to open up. So, I get that, but now on this end, I'm probably a little too open with it. But at the same time, I can't imagine not having that opportunity. But so I just recently, for the first time, went to the psychiatrist end of it too, to that level. And I didn't even understand the different levels and all that stuff. And that was helpful too. Kind of like you talk about going from the your PCP to the surgeon and that stuff. And just to continue to get healthy all the way around. And I want to tell you, there is nothing more beautiful in life than someone who is spiritually strong, and then they get emotionally healthy. It's a beautiful thing, because honestly, you don't see a lot of that. Honestly, if you go through and you listen to Christian music, our hymns, our praise songs, not a lot of them come from an emotionally healed spot.
Yeah.
They come from a victorious promise, but they don't come from an emotionally healed spot. And that's an element that's available to us. There's tools, and we ought to take advantage of it.
Yeah. I'm very, very open that I go to therapy once a week, and I've gone to therapy once a week since 2003. I guess you could say I've got to the point of where I've graduated several times, but I also know that I need that person that I can dump on, that, they can't tell anybody. There's this thing called HIPAA, they can't share. I need that. There is absolutely no shame in getting the help where it helps. And so in this, probably the last year, anything that was any type of sensitive would just touch my heart, and I would begin to cry. I couldn't preach without having to stop and get tissue and say, what's going on here? And so I went to my doctor. I was like, you got to check my testosterone. Something's going on with my hormones. We need to figure this out. And everything was fine. So I asked my therapist, and he said, when you get to a spot of where you're healed, you begin to allow yourself to feel other people's emotions. And if we are going to be Christ-like, Christ had compassion. And if we're not in an emotional place that we are protected and healed enough to allow other people's issues, problems, circumstances, for us to have true compassion on them, then we have done the gospel a disservice.
Oh, 100%. So I had, we keep talking about the 5 weeks we had at home where I went through this healing before this other layer broke, and the wheels kind of went off. But I had this moment where I went in my daughter's room and she was struggling with something, and I was talking with her, and it's kind of like, it's like full on emotional attunement, you know, hearing what she said. I was able to talk back to her, and she says, and this is after a year and a half that she saw her dad almost a train wreck, and she says, "Daddy, no one listens like you." Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the wheels come off. And there was like so many moments in that time period where I got to see all this and got to see the whole fabric of the family life change. Mm-hmm. And like, man, like, you're right. Like, that's just in the family life. And also, but was able to start to see that elsewhere. And because my capacity expanded, in my understanding of people on a whole different level, has expanded to that. But that moment was just something else. And what I have found also is things just have been able to flow a lot different from me, than just throughout most of my time as a pastor. It's probably different reasons from that, but it's in so many ways it's changed my testimony, because I had to realize I thought I made a decision, a commitment to, out of I chose the Lord because I wanted to be faithful, and no, I was a hurt kid who ran to the Lord. Now I don't doubt my calling, but I've had to wrestle with a lot of like, what made me do this and all that. So in some ways it's rattled my cage in a lot of that, but then at the same time, it's made me a lot more, I think, authentic and really, and it's been a beautiful thing for me, but man, it's a hard thing. But I wish everybody could just kind of, because you really get to look at your life when you begin to walk through it, have someone else kind of be that mirror back into you, and really kind of understand yourself a lot more. It's invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's wrapping this up. I always ask this question. If there was one message that you could give to all of our listeners, what would it be?
You know, I think I've already said, be willing to take the step, embrace emotional health. And so let me say this, because I imagine people who are looking for help may listen to this or pursuing help. For much of the early half of getting help, God was silent. And I had to wrestle with this God that loved me, who's made these promises, who's walked with me, who I thought gave me this great life, allowed this to happen, and was silent. And one of the days after EMDR, I would have processing time, and I was going to this park to walk, and I don't know, it's like a vision, or I saw a picture in my head of this dark room, and I felt like I was in this dark room, and it was like the room this whole, you know, situation, this whole life thing had been in. And it was just like, I pictured this light bulb where the string got pulled, and it got pulled and light came on, and there the Lord was, and he'd been there the whole time. Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't, and something I've had to learn to be careful with is that we are so easy to jump to say, well, this happened to allow me to be this or this. No, something crappy happened that sucked, but still maybe this good happened. And not to take away one for the other or something like that, or to trade off, but to hold both. And because it's so easy to over spiritualize or to self erase and or to do something like that. And I think that's something we've got to be careful of, but to know the Lord is there. And that's, that was such a moment of that. And it, there's been so many dips of that silence. But I always remember, hey, when the light comes on, he's going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's promised he'd never leave us or forsake us. And, yeah. I think in the times that we see that he is the furthest away are the times that he's closest, because he promised in his word that he's near to the brokenhearted. And we're certainly thankful for that today. Well, Jake, thank you so much for being here with us today, sharing your journey. Hopefully you can go relax now that the anxiety is over. We've gotten through this. And so I'll write you a doctor's note. You can take the rest of the day off.
I'm energized now. So
great.
We've got to get past it. So maybe we can do something.
Great. Of course, I'm Doc Brian. You can find all of my content, all of my information at thedocbrian.com. Again, we're on LifeWord. So if you want to look for more Christian content, go to lifeword.org. Thank you so much for being here with us today, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.